The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, my friend and engineer, engineering, producing the show on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Friday program. It's April 26, 2019. We are live during the noon hour on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and podcast at buckmastershow.com. And perhaps you're hearing a rebroadcast of the show today, Sunday morning from 6 to 7. We're on our sister station now, The Groove, 106.3. So that's a new audience there for the Buckmaster Show, but they're part of the Bustos Media family. Speaking of media, our media partners with Buckmaster include TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan Smith over there does a great job. Dan Shear at the Green Valley News and Soharita Sun. Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business and the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Police Chief Chris Magnus is with us. Chief, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It's good to see you again. Joining us in studio for the conversation with the Chief, Tim Steller, who arrived in plenty of time today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I get used to like the opening music for the show and Tim rushing in. Like 5 minutes early. Tim's a well-known columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. He started at the paper, I believe, in 1997?
Correct.
Hey, there you go. All right, Chief, let's get right into it. We've got lots of questions. Tim put out a little something on Facebook today and all of Tim's friends, and then I put it over on my Facebook page. So we've gotten some questions from Facebook folks as well. People can also call at 790-2040. Let's begin with the kind of the overall big picture, Chief Magnus. Crime rate up or down?
Crime's down. And sometimes people are surprised to hear that, because I know if you're ever the victim of a crime, it feels like it just must be up. Everything must be worse. But we're really pretty good. We're pretty sophisticated now about tracking crime in Tucson. And so we look at, so far this year compared to last year, crime is down a couple of major categories, actually. Homicide down 27%. Robberies down 27%. In some areas of town, like Midtown, close to 40%. So we're a lot of work we're doing around robberies and burglaries. Burglaries down 21%. Larcenies down 12%. Arson 31%. So, I mean, there's progress being made, but that never means we take our foot off the gas. We know that there is still lots of work to do on crime. We're trying to be more creative, strategic about how we deploy our resources. We're trying to be more data-driven. We have a crime analysis superintendent on board. His name's Dr. Jake Kramer. He's tremendously helpful.
That's all he does, look at the
numbers. That's what he does.
Right?
And, yeah. he does more even than look at that. He gives us strategies and ideas, and we really want to be smart in how we're tackling these challenges.
Tim wrote about domestic violence and its link to the murder rate here.
Let me ask you something about those numbers you just mentioned. You're talking about year to date.
That's right.
Comparing this. So one thing that people often mention to me when I talk about this is you're talking about reported crime, right?
Of course.
Because obviously you don't know what's not reported. The thing that people often say or have said for some years in Tucson is that the lesser crimes just don't get reported. You know, if there's a break-in, not much is stolen or what have you. Is that something that you've experienced?
Well, look, I hear some of this too. People say, well, you have to wait so long for a police officer to come that people just don't report crimes. But, you know, what we're doing, and I think better than ever, is what a lot of other cities are doing, which is making it easier for people to report crime, particularly property crimes, for example, online. We take a lot of property crime reports over the phone. We give people the option of coming to a substation if it looks like they're going to have to wait a long time and they're in a hurry and they want to just stop by somewhere on their way to or from work. They can do that. And so, you know, cities that have gone to multiple platforms for crime reporting have in many cases seen the reverse of what you're describing, which is the easier that you make it for people to report crime in different ways, the more, you know, crime actually reporting increases. So, we don't have data that shows conclusively either way, but I do think it makes sense to give people different options for crime reporting.
Is there a way to measure unreported crime? Is that possible? Do you survey people or...
Well, I think that's worth looking at. We're adopting what we call a CompStat 360 approach to managing crime. And part of that is also looking at community attitudes towards the police, what they're frustrated by, what they think we could do better, or what they like that we're doing. And I'd be in favor of including that in some of the surveys that we do going forward, asking people if they're not reporting crime or what methods they would find to be the most helpful for doing that. I think that's a good idea.
10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We've got so much on the agenda with Police Chief Chris Magnus. I'm going to put it to you right now, Chief. Is it time? Are you ready to say right here on the radio that it is time to take a second look at the red light cameras?
Absolutely. I don't think that red light cameras are a total solution. And I also don't think the way they were implemented in the past is the right way going forward. But I think red light cameras can be an important strategy for reducing red light violations, crashes, and deaths. We have absolutely seen the number of crashes, some of them very serious, go up at intersections compared to when the cameras were in place. But I think there are ways, if this was done in a more thoughtful manner going forward.
Transparency, and of course, oversight
right.
from at a local level.
Precisely. You know, you could even get creative and do something like give a warning for the first violation. Set the timing appropriately so, you know, it's not, people don't feel it's some sort of got you kind
of
thing.
Yeah, like a half second you're in the intersection, it's over. You're going to get...
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to find the right partner to work with.
Are they out there?
Well, I think it would be worth finding out. Uh-huh. I know there are cities that have had bad experiences like Tucson did, but there are other cities that this is working out well in. And so I think what we need to do is look at where this is working, especially as our streets are getting wider and faster. We have to have some technological help to bring these violations down. And I think, again, do I think that's the total solution? Absolutely not. Do I think it could be a piece of, if it's done right? Yes, I do.
Okay. Tim?
Were you here when the red light cameras were voted down?
I came on board, I think, just after that it happened.
Okay. Because, yeah, one of the interesting things about that dynamic, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, is that there were solutions, possible solutions to fixing the problems with the red light cameras, and nope, the council didn't take it up. The company, you know, everybody was kind of willing, but they just let the vote go ahead and didn't solve the problem, and that was that.
Well, I unfortunately I can't speak to that experience, but I can say that any red light camera program has to be appropriately managed, and people have to feel that it's not just a gotcha kind of exercise that's designed to put revenue in somebody's coffers, corporate or otherwise. Money should be dedicated towards traffic safety. It should be done in a fair and transparent way. There should be citizen oversight. So I think these are some of the things that if it was brought back, and obviously that's for the voters to decide mm-hmm. if it was, but I think it could be done in a much better way.
Tim, didn't you write about pedestrian deaths this week?
I did, yep. I do once in a while. It's been something that I've been writing about since I started the column in 2013, mm-hmm. now and then. And the problem does seem to be, if not peaking, maintaining at what I would call an unacceptable level.
A big spike.
Well, the spike happened a little while ago, a couple of years ago, a few mm-hmm. years ago, and it's just stayed up. Do you have anything to say about that, Chief Magnus?
I agree. It's a very serious problem. We've had 18 traffic deaths so far this year. It's not much better than last year when we had 20 at this same time. So we're basically on par with last year. And we, you know, half of those this year have involved pedestrians. So this is something that's really worth talking about because, again, there is no one simple solution to this. You get people that fall into camps on this issue and they become sort of absolutists one way or the other. And it's very frustrating because I think we have to take, again, a more thoughtful approach that involves a variety of different ways of addressing this. There's not, you can't just look at it from the perspective of one camp or the other.
When you say camps, you mean pro-pedestrian or pro-driver? People who blame pedestrians or blame drivers?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, there's plenty of fault to go around if we want to go down that avenue. And, you know, people, there's a lot of speeding in the community, which means we know that if somebody is going 40 in a 30 mile an hour zone and they hit somebody, the likelihood that that's going to result in death is, oh my goodness, substantially higher than if they were doing the speed limit. So regardless of whose fault it is, speed can be a contributing factor to the severity of the injury or likelihood of death. But look, again, to be fair about this, a lot of these pedestrians who have been killed so far this year and last year are folks who are stepping out into the roadway in places where they shouldn't be. They're in dark, or they may even be walking in the roadway. They're in dark clothing at night. We come to learn that a lot of them have mental health or substance abuse problems. This is complex. It's not as simple as just somebody getting hit in the crosswalk by an errant driver, although we have some of that too. And then we're back to this issue of crosswalks. Should we have more or less? What happens when drivers just look at crosswalks as a minor inconvenience or a guideline? I mean, this is craziness, so we got to deal with it.
All right, we have all sorts of platforms we're using here for questions. We're taking Facebook questions. Our phone lines are lit up, got a full board, so let's try to grab a couple of online, or let's grab a phone call here before we hear from Mona's Danish Bakery. This is Denny calling us at 790-2040. Go ahead, Denny.
Good afternoon, sir.
Your question's about staffing, I understand, and that's on my agenda, too, to ask the chief. Is that what's on your mind, Denny?
Yep. I would like to double the size.
Double the size of the entire department?
Yeah.
Okay. Denny, I don't know if that's going to be possible. I think the chief would probably love to double the size if he could, but realistically, chief, what can you do?
Yeah, Denny, that sounds great to me too, but I'm not seeing that anytime soon in the city's budget. Right now, just to bring folks up to speed, we have 820 sworn folks who are actually working in the department. I get it. Some of them are on leave for one reason or another, injury or whatever it might be, but 820. And then we have another 85 on top of that we refer to as being in the training pipeline. In other words, they've been hired, but they have to go through what is frankly a pretty lengthy training program, a police academy followed by what we call our field training officer program. So that takes some time. But if you put the 820 and the 85 together, that's 905. That's progress. We also have 40 community service officers. These are not sworn. These are professional staff, but they're incredibly valuable. In fact, they're taking 40% more calls this year than they even did last year. And we have 6 of those in the training pipeline. Now, the good news is, from a hiring standpoint, the council, they have not formally approved the budget yet, but it sounds like 20 new officers in 2020 budget, and then an additional 10 new community service officers. So all of that helps. And then I guess the last thing I'd say on this, because people have been very interested in attrition, how many people are we losing? And it, last year, before the pay increase that the council approved, we were losing a steady 8+ officers a month. Terrible. Mm-hmm. Unacceptable. Now attrition is 5 a month, and that's mostly retirees, typical reasons that people leave. any police department, not so much people leaving for other agencies. So we're making progress. It's a slow haul, though, that's for sure.
All right, we're going to listen to the chief for another minute and a half, then we're going to hear about Mona's Danish Bakery. I'm going to bring this up about our police vehicles. They look great. The fleet is great. Someone just sent me a message saying, what about electric SUVs? I mean, is that something that could be maybe in the next go-around? Because I know... I'll tell you, in a couple of years, we're going to need another reauthorization. Ask the public about it. Do you want to put some more money into the department?
Yeah, Prop 101 has been a godsend for the department in terms of updating our fleet, other things we needed, computers, new vests, a range of things. So we're incredibly grateful for the voters. But it does sunset in the next couple of years, and it will, if we don't get something similar back on the ballot that's approved, we will be in the same situation we've come from in a very short order. So that's something else we need to think about. Electric vehicles, well, the charging is kind of the problem. You would have to have charging stations as well, but we certainly look at the possibility of electric vehicles, particularly for CSOs or folks working in the parks. I think that would be ideal.
10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Chris Magnus is here. He's the police chief in Tucson. He's been here, I think it's about 3 years, right, Chief?
3.5 years.
There
you
go.
Believe that.
Tim Steller is here, columnist with the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, what is it time to do right now?
Eat some pastries.
There you go. My favorite bakery in town is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Such exciting news. It was a week ago today that they launched the hot breakfast. They got the new grill. They've got all the permits, so they're up and running. I was up there last Sunday for breakfast. I'll be up there again Sunday if folks want to stop by and say hello. I love those new blueberry pancakes, Chief. Oh, my goodness.
Sounds really good.
And the thing I will be trying, they're only going to do these two kind of specialty pancakes. I'm going to try the chocolate chip pancakes. That hot chocolate melted in with the pancake dough. Sounds good.
Do I have to stick around here, or could I be on my way right now?
There you go, right now. And they are actually, you can do breakfast all day up at Mona's Danish Bakery, Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. They are open for lunch. A sandwich on that great bread would be delicious as well. Mona'sDanishBakery.com and a link at BuckmasterShow.com, not only to Mona's, but all of our great sponsors. We've got so much more to cover with the chief. We talked a little bit about crime being down. We talked about pedestrians. We've talked about red lights, staffing. But folks have been sending a lot of questions on Facebook, including what does the police department have to do with the Stone Garden operation? That's next as we continue on Buckmaster on a Friday.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Chris Magnus is here. For 3.5 years, he's been the police chief in Tucson, Arizona. Tim Steller is here, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. And Robert, I do appreciate your patience. At 790-2040, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Bill, there's a saying for us Midtown walkers, which is dress like pavement, become pavement. Chief, to what extent are you either patronizing or supporting or ignoring illegal immigrants using police resources aside from turning them over to ICE like he should be?
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Go ahead, Chief.
Well, what we're paying attention to is anyone, including undocumented individuals who commit crime. Obviously, those are the folks that we want to pay attention to in terms of enforcement. But what we also want is a community that is as safe as possible, which means it's to our advantage to create a climate where anyone, regardless of their documentation status, feels comfortable reporting crime, being a witness to a crime, working with us to prevent crime. I think that the entire community suffers when people aren't willing to come forward and do those things. And so, you know, our view is the immigration enforcement area should be primarily left to the immigration authorities. We don't have the resources of any sort to do that, and that's not really our mission. What our goal should be is to reduce crime and improve quality of life, including traffic safety in the city. And if that means working with as broad a segment of the population as possible, even in some cases folks who are undocumented who might be willing to help us prevent or solve crimes, I think it's to our advantage to do that.
A question came up in Facebook, Tim and Chief, about Stone Garden and whether there is a connection. Are TPD officers being used in the county on Stone Garden operations? That's the first part of the question.
So we're not being used in the county. There are two separate, entirely separate operations. But I do think that the Stone Garden program and grants have value. This program started over a decade ago, actually, ironically, under a Democratic administration at the time. And the idea is that, you know, perhaps there are resources that could be made available to cities and communities around the border to help address crime, to deal with drug and gang and other kinds of issues. And so, yes, we do take advantage of those funds. We're not using them to do immigration enforcement, although, of course, if we come across individuals who are breaking the law or involved in those kind of activities that are here illegally, we do contact the Border Patrol or the other appropriate agencies. But our primary use of Stone Garden funds is to add on additional patrols in neighborhoods throughout the city. We have key areas where we know we have crime problems, and we try to beef up our presence in those areas.
Tim Steller.
Yeah, Chief, I hope I'm interpreting Robert correctly. I heard him saying, you know, that you ought to be arresting people who are in the country illegally. What's going on right now is this massive wave of asylum seekers. Have you, as a department, had a role in managing that flow? And what have you been doing about that?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that's really important to clarify about asylum seekers is the folks we are dealing with are individuals who have already been processed by the Border Patrol and ICE. In other words, they have legally come across the border, they have papers that say as much, and they are trying to get to a family that is taking them in until the time that they have an asylum hearing. Sometimes those hearings are now as far away as 1 to 2 years, but they're trying to get to a family member or a sponsor somewhere else in the country. Their goal is not to stay here in Tucson. In fact, it's to move as quickly as possible out of Tucson. But what happens is these folks are dropped off sometimes in very unpredictable numbers and times at the Greyhound bus station. I don't think it's to anybody's advantage that we would want people who have no money, no food, no water, no plans for shelter, no resources at all, just sort of wandering around. So we're trying to work with our colleagues at Catholic Community Services that have been a fantastic partner. They have been running a shelter out of the Benedictine Monastery. And they run an incredible operation where they work through the logistics of getting people who have nothing to connect with their families so a bus ticket can be sent to them to help them get some food, get on their feet, and then be on their way typically in 24 to 72 hours. But it's a phenomenal network of volunteers, and we're just trying to help with some of the logistics of that. In fact, there's help being given throughout both the city and county. A lot of work between private and public partnership here. And I think you're going to see some messaging coming out early next week by the mayor, the city manager, the county administrator, all promoting some volunteerism around this effort and encouraging ways that people can give donations that will help these people that literally have nothing.
You mentioned earlier that you all would call the Border Patrol or immigration authorities in a case if you arrested somebody and it turned out they were in the country illegally. That's more or less what you said, right? What do you think about this sanctuary initiative that would limit further than you are already limited your ability to call immigration authorities?
Well, okay, so I can only, at this point now, I'm just speaking from my own personal standpoint as a member of the community, since, you know, our job really has to be to promote accurate information about ballot proposals. We're not, you know, as appointed or elected. Well, the electeds can take whatever position they want, and I think a lot of them have taken the position that this sanctuary city idea is a terrible idea. We have a very good system here in place already for working with folks who are undocumented, for making this a welcoming community. But, you know, the whole notion even of what is a sanctuary city is complicated in a way ridiculous, because it means something different to everybody and in every city you look at. I can tell you right now, we do not provide sanctuary for criminals. Regardless of what their documentation status is. We already work with Homeland Security, with Border Patrol and others around issues involving gangs, human trafficking, other kinds of serious crime. So, you know, the question is, why are we fixing something that's not broken with the potential of making the situation worse? I think there need, you know, I would encourage people to be, to look at the fine print and consider what the consequences of approving something like this are, really to become educated on it before they just sign a petition or cast a vote.
Let's see if I can clear up some of these Facebook questions that Tim Steller had asked some of his Facebook friends about. One person is very concerned about, and I see why. I mean, we've had a problem in the foothills with mail theft, and I'm sure it's no different in the city. And I'm amazed when I drive down my street how many people still do not do locking mailboxes.
I agree. I think, you know, I realize this is sometimes easier said than done for a lot of folks. But look, in these days of identity theft in particular, anyone who has a mailbox at the curb side, for example, I think is really just asking for trouble if you don't have a locking mailbox. The postal authorities typically handle these kind of thefts or complaints, but
it's a felony.
It is, but a lot of it can be avoided
yes.
by simply getting, I know it takes a little effort to, and it's not cheap. In the scheme of things, it actually is pretty cheap to get a locking mailbox, but it's really worth the trouble for considering how much it costs once your identity is stolen. And people also get things in the mail ranging from prescriptions to a variety of, you know, driver's mm-hmm. licenses, et cetera. And so it really makes sense. Credit cards, it's worth getting a locking mailbox.
Matt Russell of On the Menu Live, he'll be coming along with Weekend Watch in a few minutes. He's very curious, of course. He's the food and beverage writer at Inside Tucson Business. He wonders about the chief when he goes out to eat. Is there a favorite restaurant that you patronize?
There are so many. Maybe that's part of the problem. You know, of course, we love El Menudo next to the police department.
Oh, yeah.
It is just consistently in the salsa.
And
the salsa is the best. And we were talking about this with one of the owners the other day, and she said that, you know, we said we love it when the salsa is even hotter than usual, and it varies from day to day because it is homemade. And she said, well, when the cook is cranky, the salsa gets hotter. So we're like, well, do whatever it takes to make the cook cranky because we really like that. But also, Augustine Kitchen is another favorite.
Saturday morning breakfast?
Oh, yeah. It's so nice over there. So there are so many good choices now. You know, Sushi Garden, that's right near where we live. We're regular patrons of that. You can't go wrong in this town when it comes to eating out.
Yep. A lot of good choices. Tim, let's go to you while we're waiting to get set up with another phone call at 790-2040.
One thing, I can't guarantee the accuracy of these numbers because I received them in an email, but from a reader who's very well clued in, and what he said is that from the first quarter of 2014 to the first quarter of 2019, the number of traffic citations issued in Tucson went from 24,000 to about, I think it was 11 or 12,000. In other words, a steep drop in the number of citations issued. And this is not red light. This is excluding red light. Leaving aside those specific numbers, is it correct that we have a steep drop in traffic citations issued? And can you explain why, if so?
Well, there certainly was a steep drop in the number of tickets when red light cameras went away. That was very significant. But overall, I think that is fair. I can't vouch for those particular numbers, but I can say it has gone down and stayed down much more than I would like. And let's just candidly acknowledge that one of the reasons for that is that when you have the number of police officers that we do, even with the alternative methods for call response, our cops are extremely busy, and there are many calls now that officers are on that take as many as 3 or 4, sometimes 5 units to deal with. When you have barricaded individuals, people with serious mental health problems, very violent crimes in progress, major crashes, these are not things that just one officer can handle or even 2 officers. And so the reality is officers have less time than they have ever had before to do traffic. That said, we are seriously committed to rethinking our entire approach to traffic enforcement. And that's one of the reasons I recently established a captain's position specifically for traffic safety to coordinate all our efforts. I've appointed Diana Duffy. She's been a very successful captain in Ops West to handle this traffic assignment. She's going to be working very closely with the city's new TDOT director, Diana Alarcon, who comes to us from Fort Lauderdale with a lot of great ideas. She's also going to be working with community groups and others. We know we have our work cut out for us, and we're ready to take it on.
All right, we're just about out of time, but there are a couple of other questions. See if we can take care of it. One person who didn't want to go on the air had to wait on, had to make a 911 call, Chief, had to be put on hold 3 to 5 minutes. Is that unusual?
So I think it is unusual, mm-hmm. and I think the wait times are getting better. But just for clarity, 911 is now run by its own department, and it's our public safety communications department for the city. There's a lot of work being done to overhaul that entire operation and bring up their staffing levels as well. So things are getting better, but we know, again, another area where we have work to do.
And again, to summarize for folks just joining us earlier in the program, the chief said he will bring up with the city administration looking at red light cameras in Tucson.
I will, but it has to come from the voters, okay. Ultimately.
Right.
They would have to be
the
ones.
You would like to see them.
I think there's value in looking at it again.
All right, Scott, I know you've been holding. We're out of time, but I'm going to put you on the air anyway. Could you summarize? You said you wanted a little more information on police and usage with the Border Patrol. Scott,
yeah.
Are you with us?
Well, yeah. I just had a quick question about sure. With the lack of police that we have in the city, how many are being used at these immigration centers while we're waiting for them to get processed? And how often or how normal is it for the mayor to have a police duty of two officers at all times?
Okay.
Well, the mayor has security. It is not at all times. It's basically when he's working, and I think that makes sense for a city of this size and some of the issues that he's had to deal with, as well as some of the folks, to be candid about it. So I think that's entirely appropriate. And as far as, I don't know what we're talking about, immigration centers.
Are we talking about
I think he's talking about the pass-through centers, like
asylum seekers.
Yeah, so we've been helping with logistics along with fire, along with the county's health department, along with others. For the most part, this is a volunteer effort. There have been some cases where we have on-duty officers who are helping, so we don't have people just wandering the streets, which would create its own humanitarian and other sorts of serious problems. So I think we've been very judicious in our use of on-duty personnel, but I think it has been necessary at times. And one of the challenges is, you know, when you get hundreds of people dropped off in a day with little to no notice, you have to respond to that. And we're trying to be smart about how we do it.
All right, Chief Magnus, thank you very much. I hope you have a great weekend dining out in Tucson.
Yeah, it sounds good, doesn't it?
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Chief, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take our break right here. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tim Steller and I will chat for a few minutes after the break. I want to ask Tim about his column today. Could Arizona's Constitution be invoked to ban militias? That's right after this. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We had an excellent conversation with audience participation and Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star with Chris Magnus, the police chief for the past 3.5 years, brought up some very interesting things about red light cameras. Is it time to let the voters take another look at that? What do you think they would say this time, Tim Steller?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we would have to do some serious research into whether what the cause and effect has been as far as the what people perceive as the increased traffic problems in Tucson. I feel it. Do you feel it? That it's gotten worse?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I can't say for sure that it's cause and effect, that the red light disappearance of the red light camera has contributed to that. But it makes sense, and I wouldn't be surprised if voters would be more persuaded now
more.
That they've seen what happened.
I don't know if it would pass, but yeah. Maybe the percentage would be more in favor of
yeah,
it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, sure. And the other thing, and I brought it up in the earlier portion of the show, that it was kind of odd how the council decided not to try to, you know, once the signatures were confirmed and the thing was going to go on the ballot, the council gave up on the idea of correcting the problems with mm-hmm. red light cameras as opposed to allowing them to be voted on and eliminated altogether.
Could Arizona's constitution be invoked to ban militias? That's part of the constitution, isn't it? You wrote about this today in your Friday column in the Star.
Yeah, it's been a curiosity of mine for some years, but after talking to a bunch of people about it, the long story short is no. It really couldn't be. And the reason it was interesting is because the Constitution, in its section that enshrines the right to bear arms, also says neither individuals nor corporations can organize or maintain or employ an armed body of men, which I think is a good definition of some of these groups. They are armed bodies of men. But on the other hand, but it doesn't, it says that the Constitution does not authorize, that is, in other words, the right to bear arms does not confer a right to, you know, basically form a band of armed men, but it doesn't say they're prohibited either. And so anyway, the long story short is I explored the issue, and really that probably cannot be used.
Roberta on 790-2040. Roberta, very quickly, you would like to make a suggestion about red light cameras. Go ahead.
Yes, I think it was done incorrectly before. They were aimed at people exiting the intersection. If they aimed them at people entering the intersection, they would catch those who are speeding up and speeding through the red lights illegally, causing the accidents.
Interesting. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the details of that. I remember digging into it at the time, and yeah, those are the kinds of tweaks, though, that could make a difference in effectiveness versus, you know, just becoming a ticket mill for the city.
What about Altoir? Are they going to pay back to the county the money for the race?
That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. I think the check has been paid. Has it been handed over?
$180,000 in overdue invoices, yeah, for traffic control and other such. Well, that check's going to be going over to Chuck Huckleberry in Pima County.
Yeah, well, that's great news. I talked to Pat Lopez about that earlier this week. He's, I think, chair of the board now of Altoir. And he's got some new board members. And after the, you know, increasing financial troubles they've had, they're trying to kind of reimagine the ride. I was going to say the race, but formally it's a ride. And I'm really happy that they're able to kind of, they're starting to move past the bad parts of our recent history with that.
This three-way race for mayor on the Democratic side, they had their first debate. I think it was this week. Did you go?
I didn't attend, no.
How is that race shaping up?
I mean, you know, you
all
have...
All are not on board with the sanctuary city. They've all said...
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
you would think...
None of the three said they are endorsing,
yep,
the sanctuary city situation. So that's not an issue that can separate the three. So
right.
What's the issue?
Well, I mean, there's different political blocks that each,
right,
of them represents,
exactly,
you know? So you got...
they have their certain supporters, very loyal supporters.
Correct, yeah. I mean, Steve Farley had a whole set of people who, you know, he scratched some backs by making endorsements in the last election, and those people are going to be scratching his back in return in this election. And, you know, the same goes for other candidates. Perhaps the most, you know, the outlier is Randy Dorman, who is a businesswoman, hasn't been in elected office, but you know, she'll represent a certain segment of society.
All right, Tim, I'm out of time. What about your column? And
you
three columns a week.
I try, yep. Yeah. Not every week do I get to it. But,
no, but there's one coming up Sunday.
There sure is. Yeah, I'm working on something to do with this asylum seeker migration crisis and a comparison of sorts with the approach, the pragmatic approach of people in the Tucson area versus the more, I would call it, ideological approach that you're getting from politicians on a national level.
You know, you always learn something in this business, and I did not know, again, we are out of time, about the Stone Garden. I did not know the city connection to that. Did you know about that?
You know, I had not remembered that.
So
but
are
you
surprised?
I was surprised, yeah, because it's that question of, you know, being close to the border. And
right.
We're not that close to the border here. Mm. But, yeah, there's all kinds of different ways that money can be used. And we did some investigative reporting on that years ago. I think they had to do some reforms as a result in the way that it's accounted for.
Okay. Tim Steller, thank you very much. We'll look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star, which I still have delivered on my doorstep.
Good, good. Thank you. I do too.
Okay. We'll be back with Matt Russell with his weekend watch.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Time to stir it up, baby, on Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist. Weekend Watch is proudly presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. What a great weekend getaway this would be. Why not pile in the car after the show and head for Silver City? Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find so many recreation ideas. Let's go hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or hanging out in historic Silver City. Great places to stay as well. southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, Matt Russell. Matt, good to hear what the chief loves to eat out here in town.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he hit on a couple of my favorite restaurants. I have long been a fan of Augustine Kitchen there in the Mercado and, of course, the classic other restaurants that he had talked about. I think he's working with a pretty good list.
Yeah, we got a great hour going here. Let's talk about the new cocktail menu. Is that going on at the Hub, Matt?
Yeah, it absolutely is. Now, if you can believe this, Bill, there hasn't been an update to the cocktail menu at Hub Restaurant and Creamery for several years. And let me say, the brand new cocktail menu that just launched earlier this week was well worth the wait. There are 9 new cocktails on this spirituous spread from the light and bright side, like the Basil Buck with basil-infused vodka, to the big and boozy side, like the Santa Cruz Float with single malt whiskey, milk stout syrup, and a scoop of salted caramel ice cream. How's that for beating the heat? I say spend your weekend sipping across the spectrum of Hub's new cocktail.
Hey, that agave festival's taken off, hasn't it?
It really is one of the events that defines the Old Pueblo, Bill, this Agave Heritage Festival. But the marquee event for this weeks-long affair is tomorrow night from 7 to 10 p.m. at Hotel Congress. It's the Agave Fiesta, where more than 30 tequilas and mezcals and bacanoras will be showcased for your sipping pleasure. And you're also going to get a chance to taste some of the entries in a high-stakes cocktail competition while enjoying some live music and some great food, flautas and tacos and tostadas and more. I'll be taking the stage as MC again, looking for all the Buckmaster Show listeners who can get their tickets now at agaveheritagefestival.com.
Let's make tequila the official drink of the state of Arizona.
Can we do that right here and right now?
I declare it. Hey, one of the great charities in this town is Make-A-Wish Arizona, Matt.
It sure is. And rounding out the weekend, it's the Delicious Wishes event on Sunday at 4 o'clock at the Tucson Marriott University Park, where local chefs are going to be showcasing their culinary creations, all to benefit, as you said, Make-A-Wish Arizona. With your $75 ticket, you can help to transform the lives of local kids and their families while you do a little mixing and mingling and exploring the flavors of Tucson with some Southern Arizona breweries and distilleries. I think it's a delicious way to help grant wishes to kids right here in need.
Coming up in the column in Inside Tucson Business.
So is there really a culinary context behind the Ina Road traffic interchange construction project? You'll enjoy hearing the perspectives of one Ina Road restaurateur who had much to say, and it's all in my column this week in Inside Tucson.
Hey, and some big, big, big news. Sitting here in the big chair while I'm in the Caribbean, Matt Russell's going to do a On the Menu live on Buckmaster. That's going to be an exciting hour.
One of the honors of my broadcast career, Bill, and I mean that sincerely, to sit in that chair and to reflect on the magnitude of my good fortune to take the reins for an hour of local food and beverage talk is something that that I'm really looking forward to on May the 15th. I thank you, and I'm grateful for your trust in having me represent the Buckmaster brand. It's going to be one delicious hour, and I hope to do you proud, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. I look forward to it. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
Alrighty then, the Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're so excited also about our sister station, The Groove, 106.3, and this news that they will be carrying the Buckmaster Show, the re-airing of this Friday program that will be 6 to 7 on Sunday morning on The Groove. If you're out and about this weekend, you might want to sample it. Give The Groove a sample, part of our Bustos Media group here in Tucson. Bob Dio, Bob, thanks. You had a great week here on Buckmaster. Always doing a great job for us, engineering and producing. Rosemary Brandt. Rose has been with me since day one of the radio project. Make sure all of the podcasts are up in such a timely fashion. Does a great job for us. Everybody here at Bustos Media in their support of the Buckmaster Show, including Jerry Cross, the funny man production guy, doing a great job. Ray Allen, our operations manager here at the station. The whole team, the front office team, Elsa and Alicia, thank you very much. I am Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and a great weekend.